go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, and welcome to this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 8th day of August, 2013. Sorry, I was about a minute slow getting to the magic button and hitting the third switch. Sometimes I have to enter into negotiations with the production computer here to decide whether or not it's, in order for it to decide whether or not it's going to allow itself to be used in the production of yet another 3 hours of conversation radio. That's what happened. It's just old, I think. It's just old. You know, being left on for 4 or 5 years without a break. It's just old. Right, but it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And, of course, the horn is available to anyone and everyone who wants to listen to it, without regard to ability to pay or without regard to, well, and y'all make it that way. That's the important part. You all make it available to whomever wants it, regardless of ability to pay. And that's the absolute truth. So thank you very much. We got, thanks to Dr. Allen's challenge last night, we got within striking distance. Dr. Allen challenged for the $100. Y'all responded, and that means we are within, as far as the evening's fundraising is concerned, there's $150 to be raised this evening, and we're about $150 down from having the rest of everything else. Well, we can see the top of the August pit. We can see the top of the hole we got in with the end of July and not reaching the goal there. We can see it. We've got our fingers clawing madly at the dirt, trying to pull ourselves out of that funding hole. And I think we can do it. So 30 folks, $10 apiece, and we will, hopefully, 8 days into August, finally climb out of July's hole. At least, that's the plan. And you know what? I think we can do it. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. And, of course, so too is the traditional mail address. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Please note that checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should be made to the Horn or Head On Communications, something like that, which makes it easier for Boss Man Wayne to deal with when he goes off to the sends the money off to the account. So there we are. It really is Thorn in the Side Thursday here. And let us start with the nominations right away. Tim from L.A. sent in a Thorn in the Side Thursday nomination of what is referred to as a right-winger who is even dumber than a Tea Partier. Dumber than a bagger. Now remember, these are the baggers. These are people who say, get your government hands off my Medicare. That kind of stuff. That kind of stupid. We're talking about people who hold signs in front of the Supreme Court saying Canada has universal health care and can't grow much food. Saw that one for myself. Ferg nicknamed him the Snapple guy because he makes about as much sense as something under the top of a Snapple cap. Yeah, yeah. But no, let's see here. The story concerns one Stephanie Bannister. She's running for office from Queensland. She wants to be a member of the Aussie Parliament. She's a member of the so-called One Nation Party. And she is worried about the Muslims. Really? I'm sorry, Australia. I really am. We sneeze, and you get Ebola. I'm sorry. There we were, just toddling along the United States of America with a goofy-ass legislature in North Carolina tying an anti-abortion bill to an anti-Sharia law bill. Huh. And lo and behold, here comes Stephanie Bannister, 27 years old, mother of two, from Queensland in Australia, who says, "I don't oppose Islam as a country, but I do feel their laws should not be welcome here in Australia." F me! I don't oppose Islam as a country? Again, I'm sorry. We started this. A bunch of right-wing, dumber-than-dirt, pig-ignorant, bug-eyed freaks started this Sharia law business, fundamentalist, evangelical Christians in the United States, and bang, there it is. Somebody take away her satellite subscription, please. Apparently, somehow or another, Fox News, Radio Rwanda, is being piped. I don't know. Maybe it's out in the open. Is it? Somebody tell... Robert? Angry? I mean, do y'all just get Fox News now? Because I don't know how this disease is transmitted otherwise. I don't oppose Islam as a country, but I do feel their laws should not be welcome here in Australia. I mean, she is being referred to now as Australia's Sarah Palin, and she's a big thinker. Stephanie Bannister is real big thinker. Do you like that line about "I don't oppose Islam as a country"? Mm-hmm. Well, you're gonna like this one too. She, on the other hand, supports the Jews because they follow Jesus Christ. Pretty clear to me she's falling in the sheep dip. I'm sorry. I apologize, Robert, and everybody else in Australia. I can't resist the opportunity to haul out my cheesy Australian accent. I get tired of doing my cheesy Appalachian accent sometimes. Yes, she said that. She supports the Jews because they follow Jesus Christ. She also wants to outlaw halal food, halal being the Muslim sort of close equivalent of the idea of kosher, you know, food on the list of foods that are safe and that the invisible sky spook wants you to eat but not eat other things. But she called it haram food. She wants to outlaw Muslim-approved dietary law food, but she says that the kosher food can stay because it doesn't have a tax on it like the haram food does. And haram and halal. Halal is acceptable, haram is forbidden. So... And she's all set to, she's all set to outlaw the Quran. Yeah, 11 minutes after 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Did I tell you what a buddy of mine is doing with tequila? there's a fairly cheap brand around here, and he's taken to soaking star anise, cinnamon stick, and cloves in his tequila. He runs a little Mexican, well, Central American restaurant over in Fayetteville. And he lets the spices soak in the tequila, and then he starts a very low, slow hickory-fed fire in his smoker, and he lets the cool smoke waft over the tequila in an open pan, and then he rejugs it. Oh my goodness gracious! What a lovely flavor it has. You're probably sitting there saying, Bob, nobody's that dumb. No, you're not, because, well, we have evidence that people are that dumb all the time. But I say this, this came in literally at 1 minute before showtime from Tim in L.A., so I just want to compare her actually saying this crazy crap with my... My very probably not terribly impressive impression of what she must have sounded like when she actually said the crazy crap. So let's go. And, you know, she's got Sarah Palin kind of looks going for her, so it'll turn on all the right wingers.
Contamination scare at a Logan shopping centre will stand as a One Nation candidate at next month's election. In an exclusive interview, Stephanie Bannister told 7 News Islam was a country and shared her unique understanding of the big issues.
Unique.
Stephanie Bannister is a migrant, an alleged criminal.
Hello, Stephanie Bannister.
And at 27, One Nation's poster girl for young voters in Rankin.
I don't oppose Islam as a country. But I do feel that their laws should not be welcome here in Australia.
The religion is at the centre of her political beliefs. The mother of two from Kingston wants halal food banned.
Less than 2% of Australians follow haram.
Or the Quran, as the Islamic text is known. Kosher food for Jewish Australians is fine.
Jews aren't under haram. They have their own religion, which follows Jesus Christ.
Judaism rejects Jesus Christ. Just like Islam, it has its own dietary law and food certification.
They don't have a tax on it. They've just got a certain way of making it, where haram has a tax on the food.
Kosher has a fee too.
NDIS, where do you stand on that? Do you want the National Disability Scheme?
I believe that the disability scheme is working at the moment.
It doesn't start until 2016.
I like to see the government drop its five-star budget down to an economy budget. With the way the economy is going at the moment, I don't see why the government feels that it should remain at a five-star budget when economy is just as good.
The candidate is facing criminal charges accused of plastering anti-Muslim stickers like Halal Food Funds Terrorism on Nestle products at a supermarket in Logan.
The Electoral Commission will decide if Mrs. Bannister can run. Candidates are disqualified if they've been convicted or about to be sentenced to jail.
She's about to reappear in court. The seat the mother wants stretches from Regent's Park to Rochdale South, with opponents like...
I'm still learning all the names of people in politics.
The LNP's David Lynn and Labor's Jim Chalmers are contesting Rankin. As a trained welder, Stephanie Bannister says she's used to heat.
You've got a lot to learn.
Oh, definitely, and everyone in the world has a lot to learn about day-to-day stuff, and it's
just that Stephanie Bannister has a little more to learn than other folks. Look, I need to check back in the chat room real quick to see if Texas Betsy's run screaming from the room yet. Lottie asking, are you sure, Bob, that she isn't from Mississippi and just visiting Australia? But, oh, Jesus. Will in Chicago noting, this woman is so dim that the Hubble telescope would have trouble seeing the light from her eyes. Oh, for heaven's sakes. But there was another story that I had sitting in the stack, all ready to go this evening. And I ran Stephanie Bannister out in front of it as a way of showing what the impact... By the way, Robert, Angry Architect, John, anybody? Please tell me that the Australian Election Commission, that this is a no-brainer for them, that they'll go, nope, sorry. Please. But then again, if we think of it, in that district, what kind of chances does she have? I'd be interested to know. How many people, and by the way, she showed up for the shoot for this. She showed up for the interview, modestly dressed, but at the same time, doing her best Sarah Palin, put it on display, kind of, yeah, big, oh, God. She's going to have fans. Thankful to Jesus Christ. Yeah, Marty, there you go. That's a Taliban equivalent Aussie. Taliban equivalent Aussie. Also, American. She's a Tea Partier. But, I said the United States sneezes and some other country gets the sickness. Witness Mike Huckabee. Now, Mike Huckabee has a radio show, and who knows, it may replace Flush Flimball on all of those Cumulus stations, right? And Mike Huckabee has all right-wing Repiglicans, been an absolute dither about... the closure of some embassies based upon, well, intel that suggested they might be attacked. And the Republicans are all screaming, wag the dog, wag the dog, wag the dog. And about half the progressives and liberals are in there with them, wag the dog, wag the dog. Eddie Snowden is Jesus. So, here we go. It was Monday, this past, when Mike Huckabee, Baptist hustler and former governor of Arkansas, got behind... Oh, my God, we got... Please, okay, I know we're only trying to raise $300 tonight, but can we... Can you think we... Oh God, if we could only raise another $400, I could... Ah! I don't even like the idea that Mike Huckabee and I use the same microphone. There's a picture that he's sitting here standing behind an Electro Voice RE20, which is, yeah, that's definitely an Electro Voice RE20. Huh! Be nice to... Well, never mind. That's just silly. But Mike Huckabee can explain to us all, and especially people who have had their brains removed, well, eroded away by years and years and years of listening to right-wing palaver, why it is that the Muslims want to bomb our embassies. Here we go.
I'm Beth.
Yeah, well, Beth, we'll come back. Not you, Beth. Advertisement, Beth. We'll come back to you after the advertisement here. See, I'm still being dragged into the second decade of the 21st century, and I've forgotten that there's always an ad in front of sound clips. Because if I play them and then I pause them where I want them, but half the time they're tired. Well, I told you the computer wasn't cooperating. That's probably why I had a bunch of stuff queued up. Now, here we go.
We're not supposed to say anything unkind about Islam. I mean, it's politically incorrect. I get that. But could someone explain to me...
Okay, now, wait. I want to just share something with you here. We should have copyrighted or patented or said some sort of legalistic magic words over the idea of conversation radio, because do you know what Mike Huckabee's slogan is? The Mike Huckabee Show. More conversation, less confrontation. In a pig's eye. Because any time that you start out saying, you know what, you're not supposed to say anything bad about Islam, that's pretty much that tells you there's some confrontation on the way.
That we tiptoe around a religion that promotes the most murderous mayhem on the planet.
See, that's the problem, Reverend Mike. I'm not sure that Islam does that. Because the fundamental Christianity that you hustle glorified dim leader when he went off to start a war in Iraq that was based on lies. Yes, it did. The Methodist Church to which dim leader belongs begged him not to. But your Southern Baptist Convention, Reverend Mack, your Southern Baptist Convention said, we support attacking the people of Iraq and killing a million innocent civilians because Peter owned a sword. There we are with the sword thing again. We went over that, what, last night? I'm not sure if more mayhem has been unleashed by Islam or by fundamentalist evangelical Christianity operating behind things like repig-licking presidents who were appointed by the Supreme Court and not elected by the people of the United States. Just saying.
In their so-called holiest days.
Let's go back.
I know we're not supposed to say anything unkind about Islam. I mean, it's politically incorrect. I get that. But could someone explain to me why it is that we tiptoe around a religion that promotes the most murderous mayhem on the planet in their so-called holiest days?
Yeah, that whole less confrontation part of the slogan just went right out the window, didn't it? Bye! See you, Mike!
You know, if you've kept up with the Middle East, you know that the most likely time to have an uprising of rock throwing and rioting comes on the day of prayer on Friday. So the Muslims will go to the mosque and they will have their day of prayer and they come out.
Wait. It's only fair. I need to put the disclaimer out there. This is the part where I advise you to go and get the tennis ball and the duct tape. Unless you want to be reduced to screaming like me.
Uprising of rock throwing and rioting comes on the day of prayer on Friday. So the Muslims will go to the mosque and they will have their day of prayer and they come out of there like uncorked animals.
Yeah, he did. The Reverend Mike Huckabee, follower of Christ, the Prince of Peace, just referred to some couple of billions of human beings as rock-throwing, uncorked animals. He really did. Texas Betsy noting, I have several friends who are Muslim and who are celebrating Eid today. Today is Eid al-Fitr. It's the end of the Ramadan fasting and, yeah. They're celebrating Eid today, Texas Betsy says. Lots of Facebook pics of the holiday clothing, the kids and the food, and just, you know, not plotting mayhem. Bingo. There are there are Muslims all over the planet who haven't thrown a rock all day. Didn't throw one last Friday, didn't throw one the Friday before that, or the Friday before that, or the Friday, or ever. Probably overstating the obvious here. But not in the fetid swamps of the imagination of Mike Huckabee. Because all Muslims are uncorked animals. I would actually expect Mike Huckabee to know a little bit better. Except for the fact, well, I would expect him to know better because apparently there was no Lubies or Morrisons or anything near the herpetological park and holiness sanctuary where Mike preached. Otherwise, my God, if you've ever seen the Church of Christ, the Methodists, and the Baptists get into it trying to get in the front of the cafeteria line after Sunday services, bah, throwing rocks. We're talking throwing elbows, people. But every Muslim, he just said it. Every Muslim on the planet is an uncorked animal after saying prayers. Do enlighten us further, Reverend Mack.
Throwing rocks and burning cars. I mean, you know, I'm just pointing out that for all of the demands that we're supposed to be so very polite, and I'm not saying all Muslims are radical, and I am not saying that all Muslims are violent. I'm not.
Except you just did. Do you see, this is more than just another day of hate from the right wing. This right here is a little petri dish laboratory experiment displaying exactly how right wing hate works. All Muslims are rock-throwing, uncorked animals, except I'm not saying that. Except I said that. Well, what else did you say, Mike?
But as a government recognize that the most likely times for them to erupt in some type of terrorist activity, violent storming of an embassy, is on their holy days. Now, my point is, I mean, do you ever say, oh boy, it's Christmas. Oh my gosh, these Christians are going to come out of that Christmas Eve service and they are going to Walmart and they are going to so rip that place apart because you know what happens when they go in there and pray about Jesus.
Mike, that's not Christmas. That's the day after Thanksgiving, you dumbass. Because Thanksgiving, that, no matter how much I try to secularize it, it is one of my favorite holidays. It's a day where you're supposed to be praying a lot and then eating. Thanksgiving. One is giving thanks to. Yeah, right. No, do tell us about the peaceful Christians some more.
Straight to the mall, and they just, I mean, they set fire to the place. I mean, when Christians get out of their Christmas services, about the worst thing they do is commit the sin of gluttony when they go to some Christmas dinner, be it at a restaurant or at someone's home.
Baptist that he is, he can't quite bring himself to mention midnight mass now, can he? No.
I mean, for most of us, the holiest days that come in the Christmas Christian world, particularly Christmas and Easter, I don't really recall that the government has to issue a warning and say, look out, it's Easter.
No, but news outlets, local channels and whatnot will tell you about Black Friday after Thanksgiving. And then, well, I mean, we've done the stories here. People trampled to death, people shot, people murdered. Yeah. But see, that's not religion. That's consumerism. Oops, that's religion. Christianity, national religion, kiss my foot. The American national religion is consumerism and consumption. And we will kill over it. Oh, but I don't know. We're more than halfway through the clip, and he hasn't gotten to the really scary part about the rock throwing uncorked animals at the end of at the end of Ramadan. Those clever Muslims and their lunar calendar. We've got a nice sacred calendar that Jesus Christ himself gave us that begins on January 1st and ends on December 31st. And January 1st is the traditional day when Jesus got his little pee-pee whacked. But we always know that Christmas is on December 25th, so you know when the Christians are out there going to be out there trying to trample people. Thanksgiving's always the fourth Thursday in November, so you can stay away. But those clever, crafty, inscrutable Islams, I don't object to Islam as a country. Those inscrutable Islams, you never know when Ramadan's going to happen. Hell, it could be in November, or maybe it could start in July and end in August. How's a poor Christian to know when to start ducking the rocks? Oh, Reverend Mike, why didn't you warn us?
Those Christians are coming. They'll be throwing eggs all over town.
That's Halloween.
It's just not what we do. It never occurs to us that on the days in which we're supposed to be humbled by the presence of God, that somehow we would rise up and kill innocent people, including children. It just doesn't seem to fit. And I know I'm likely to just get hammered for what I just said.
No, apparently, Mike, before you went on the air, you went out and got hammered. If you were a normal human being, I'd think you were a bourbon guy. You look kind of bourbonish. But I'm guessing that you're one of those that thinks he can hide it on his breath if he, you know, eats a few Tic Tacs after downing a half a quart of cheap McCormick vodka. You seem like that type. That's the right thing. Like I said, I come by this honest. I remember the story. And you know, maybe that's the key to immortality. Remembering stories of our predecessors. Old Paul Davis telling my father, a young man, son, drop by the liquor store and pick me up a pint of old Overholt. Bring it in the back. Your grandmother may be having the preacher over. And the indignance and the anger, the fury even. That my father felt that his grandfather should have to hide anything he, as a free American, might want to do within the confines of his own home. And old Paul Davis said, "No, it ain't worth getting your grandmother upset. She thinks highly of the preacher." Let's get done with this.
So be it. I bring it up because it just doesn't make sense to me. We've got this Yahoo down in Fort Hood, Texas, Nadal Hassan, who's going on trial this week. And we're so careful to protect him. And we'll talk about that later today, because here's another one that doesn't make sense. This guy was saying all kinds of radical stuff.
Oh, this is the other thing.
We knew he was trouble. The military had clear indication that this guy was off his rocker. And that,
oh, wait, you're setting up his insanity defense, Reverend Mike. Are you sure you want to do that? Yeah, get hammered. It doesn't make sense to Mike Huckabee, he says, that Muslims are uncorked animals. You get that? There's a reason we call this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I guess. Well, wait a second. Yeah, okay. Marty noting. Day after Christmas, too, Bob. I get it. And Marty, being a sports fan, says, apparently he hasn't noticed what happened over the past year or so in the cities of the winner of the World Series, San Francisco, the Super Bowl, Baltimore, the NBA, Miami, and NHL. Who won? That would be Chicago, I think. I do, yeah, that was Chicago, because Dr. Bill was heartbroken because it wasn't his beloved Bruins. I do believe there was rock throwing and other acts of vandalism happened in the wake of those events. Doubt many, if any, were Muslims. Probably lots of Christians, though. Well, thank you, Jack. I appreciate that. Jack in Shreveport saying, yes, yes, Bob, but your Electro Voice RE20 is used for good. And noting, Jack did also, Dim Leader used the word crusade when he started his little illegal war. Of course, crusade is a word that was not come up by the Muslims. They already had their perfectly good word for that. We've been beaten over the head with it lately. The last, 11, 12 years or so. No, we invented the crusade, war for the cross. Just remember. And then this from Sergi in Texas. Subject line, uncorked animals. Sergi notes, is he insinuating that Christians losing it in church and dancing around yelling incoherent gibberish, a.k.a. speaking in tongues, is not acting like uncorked animals? Signed, Sergei Ekalipia Jarugushi, Kyle. Yeah. Ron and Raleigh noting, under the subject line, bumpers are us. While you can't resist your Crocodile Kincaid impression, as good a name for it as any, actually, I can't resist my favorite Aussie bumper music. Thank you, Ron. Thank you very much. It provides a nice little opportunity for a break here. Although I had one picked out, too. Maybe we'll just run them back to back. Here we go. There. That's nice. Okay. Oh, good. We have an official response in from Robert in Australia. Our man on the ground down under. Or if we, that's another thing. They're not necessarily down under. We're not up over. We could be down under. We really don't know what the orientation of the universe is, do we? From Robert in Australia, Stephanie Bannister and One Nation. Bob, sorry, I overslept and got to the show late. Well, I'm glad I didn't have to put you to sleep, Robert. But I do that to so many people. I had to look up Stephanie Bannister, as I've never heard of her. Logan is a small town south of Brisbane in Queensland, which is probably why I've never heard of her. And the political party One Nation is limited to just a few northern states. No one in the south pays any attention to them. One Nation is a bit like your Tea Party. It's right-wing and nationalistic. It's just been around longer. It was started by a woman whose name I won't mention, some years back, and apart from public funding for election campaigns and keeping it, it's never achieved anything. It was at its height in 1998 and has been going downhill ever since. To be quite honest, though, I thought One Nation was dead. I'd say the only reason Stephanie Bannister got a three-minute segment on the 6 p.m. news was for comedy relief. Not even the people in Logan, Queensland could take that seriously. As for her being allowed to run with criminal charges laid against her, I'm unsure of the law regarding that at this time. I'd have to look it up. P.S. The founder of One Nation was just as nuts, had a catchphrase, "Please explain," which she used all the time, failing to understand even simple questions, and has long since disappeared from politics. May the same thing happen to Stephanie Bannister, and hopefully she'll stop huffing the acetylene from the welding torch. That last part was mine. Okay, thank you. Thank you for clearing some of that up for us, Robert. I really appreciate it. And I'm glad you were probably still asleep while I was doing my bad Crocodile Kincaid impression. I try not to do that very often, but with her, how could I help? Oh, God. Now Robert's going to go back and download the... Maybe I can edit out the Crocodile Kincaid before it goes up to the podcast. So, yeah, it's about... we're about 45 minutes into the program. Doesn't time fly when you're showing off the stupid? Oh, hey, and thanks to Jack. Jack let me know something today. I have sad news. You can tell it's not that sad because of the way I say I have sad news. I did not make the Talkers Magazine Frontier 50. It's apparently been kind of corporatized. Number one on the, and it was released like yesterday, number one on the Talkers Magazine Frontier 50 is now Glenn Beck. Somehow I have a hard time seeing Glenn Beck as Frontier anything, unless you're talking about moving to Mountain Meadows, having 9 dozen wives, and, well, you get the idea. No green-eyed monster here. Oh, I could just sit here and DJ my little heart out. I got a song. Ron and Raleigh has sent a song. And Jim just sent along a reminder. And the reminder, Jim sent along a reminder of a symphonic piece, Australia Beneath the Southern Cross from the Victory at Sea series. It's beautiful. It is. It truly is. That was who and the NBC Orchestra? I forget. But it was beautifully done. My father always loved it. I grew up watching that series. But when Jim said Southern Cross, I immediately thought of, because I'm shallow, Crosby, Stills, and Nash's Southern Cross. And what's the... We all know I have a fascination with sailing vessels. On a sailboat out in the middle of the ocean, is it possible to get so far away that right-wing babble can't reach you? Mm-hmm. On the downhill run to Papeete. Yeah. But no, Ron came up with a nice one. His favorite Australian band. This is the Horn. We're trying to keep everything all afloat these days and trying to raise $300 this evening. If you want to hit the PayPal button, you're more than welcome to do so.
Out where the river broke, the bloodwood and the desert oak, holding wrecks and boiling diesels, steam and 45 degrees.
The time has come to save.
Awesome. Just awesome. Midnight Oil. Beds are burning. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. I'll be honest. I don't know. I've been feeling very DJ-ish earlier today. See, when Mike Huckstrebe started talking about how none of them Christians ever, right? Yeah. I just got to thinking. Well, was it Jim in Louisiana I was talking to the other evening and talking about how the patron saint band of the horn is the Drive-By Truckers and has been since the program's inception. Whenever I hear a right-wing fundamentalist evangelical start talking about the piety and holiness of Christians, somehow or another, sooner or later, I'll think of this song. Compilation Pizza Deliverance. That's the patron saint band of this little effort. Too much sex, too little Jesus. And apparently it is dedication night at the Horn. I had no idea. Oh, Betsy, I don't think you want me to share that. but no, it's dedication night. This coming in from Chris, otherwise known as Blue Ape, in the chat room. Let's see what we got here. Oh, I like your taste, Chris. Good taste.
Picture a bright blue ball just spinning free, dizzy with eternity. Hate it with the skin of sky, crushing some clouds and sea. Call it home for you.
revolves and the nighttime falls. And again the hunt begins, again the blood wind calls. Sidewalks and it rolls the streets, staking curb, dividing up meat. Nightmare, spook, piece of meat. It's you and me, you and me. Hey, flash blade in ghetto night. All fall down. Call my sergeant, pinstripe bosses, roll the dice. Anyway they fall, guess who gets to pay the price? Money green, a proletarian gray, selling guns instead of food and beer. So the kids they dance and shake their bones, and the politicians throwing stones, singing ashes, ashes, all.
Grateful Dead and the studio version of Throwing Stones. Nice catch, Chris. Well, the mention of Victory at Sea prompted responses both from Jack, this music, yeah, that music, and Robert in Australia says, I've just started watching Victory at Sea. An amazing series. And he backs up a little bit and to his previous remarks on the One Nation, Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann wannabe down in Australia. Sorry, Bob, that email was poorly typed. We have public funding of elections here in Australia. One Nation's main claim to fame was taking public funds and party infighting. I wouldn't be surprised if Stephanie Bannister was in it for the money. Anybody remember Sarah Palin's Republican National Committee shopping spree? Jesus, they repoed her clothes. Oh, well, okay, Sandra. Oh, yeah. We are an eclectic lot, aren't we? Yes, we are. Nice, between the bunch of us, I got a feeling we could put together just one hell of a mixtape. Just Sandra writing, if you're DJing and attaching a tune. And how can I not? We'll get back to reality in a minute. We would have taken this long. Yeah, anyway. Thanks, Sandra. This is pretty awesome. I love Tom Waits.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole.
Singers with the ooh 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 and the, oh man, that's almost haunting. Down in a Hole, Tom Waits. Thank you, Sandra. Excellent addition to the little stop set there. That's 4 minutes after 7 o'clock here on the here in the Appalachians in the Eastern Time Zone. This is the Horn, Thorn in the Side Thursday, and yeah, it's time to. It's not like we weren't doing stories before. I haven't done a DJ stop set in a while, so that was fun. It really was fun, and I admit the creative urge, or the DJ urge, got started earlier today. I'm a horrible devotee of Charlie Pierce's blog over at Esquire.com, and lo and behold, if he didn't single out one of my favorite DBT songs, Drive By Trucker songs, as one of the great rock and roll anthems today, under the heading of his topic, Stuff I Like, wrote a post about the drive-by trucker's Carl Perkins Cadillac, which I think you've heard on this program from time to time, which is just beautiful. And that just, I've been in a happy rock and roll mood all day long. I need more of those, frankly. By the way, thanks to Thomas. Thank you very much. Thomas just took care of 1/10 of the fundraising for this evening. So that means we only need 27 more folks at $10 apiece, or one person at 270, or two people at 135, and I'm not doing any more math after that because that's how I get in trouble. But that's what will get us to where we need to go for fundraising for this evening. And, well, the bills pile up from month to month, and got some bill paying to do. But anyway, if we can get there, it sure would be great. Back into real news kind of stuff. Last night I mentioned in a conversation with Jim Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli and his ambitions toward being governor of the state. Of course, he's embroiled in the little grift and gift-giving, that's what we're calling it these days, isn't it? The scam that also caught up right-wing Repiglick and Pat Robertson University graduate Governor Bob McDonnell. He's also a big fan of crisis pregnancy centers. Now, this is not the same thing as an abortion clinic. No, not by any stretch of the imagination, it's not. The other day, Beth, who has written beautiful, beautiful words explaining a little bit of and describing a little bit about her lifetime's work at a women's reproductive health care center, sent me something on Facebook the other day that fairly made me want to scream. We know what's been going on, and again, it's the viral nature of this right wing can't mind our own business politics. Beth sent along a note pointing out that what's been going on in Texas is spreading. We know it spread to North Carolina, for instance. Motorcycle helmet law with an anti-abortion bill tacked on, an anti-Sharia law bill with an anti-abortion bill tacked on. But it's coming to West Virginia. We have this attorney general here. For a long time, this state was blessed with a man of great integrity and good spirit named Daryl McGraw. But the teabagging money and the various and sundry Citizens United money came in this past election cycle and took away from us a man who has been committed to making scammers and corporate profiteers behave a little bit more like human beings. You know, remember, they're persons. But we lost Daryl McGraw, whom I consider a personal friend. And he was replaced by this carpetbagger from New Jersey. No offense to anybody from New Jersey. By the name of Patrick Morrissey, a former lawyer for Big Pharma, who couldn't even be bothered to pass the West Virginia bar to become attorney general until the very last instant. Well, Patrick Morrissey, who doesn't know Frazier's bottom from left hand, who couldn't find either with both hands, has decided he wants to know what West Virginians think about the abortion. This is the straight-up language from an Eric Eyre piece from the Charleston Gazette, which is the paper of record for this state. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey wants to hear what the public has to say about abortion laws and regulations. Morrissey's office started soliciting public comments Wednesday, this is back in July, amid the Attorney General's ongoing review of abortion regulation. Morrissey said he's seeking comments about abortion in, quote, West Virginia and elsewhere. Huh? He's the Attorney General of West Virginia. He's not the Attorney General of elsewhere. Apparently not a very good lawyer either. But yet, you don't have to be a good lawyer if all you want to do is open the state up to all the grift and graft and corruption that the right wing carries with it. Our goal is to I don't have any faith in my New Jersey accent. Our goal is to rise above the name calling and attacks and make this a thoughtful civil process that focuses on the law and the facts, Morrissey said in a statement posted on his website. On the other hand, a woman I know, Margaret Chapman Pomponio, said he's making a mockery of medicine and government. West Virginians don't deserve this overreach from their attorney general. You know what's coming. And frankly, given the dynamics here in the state of West Virginia, we do not have nearly the number of people committed to freedom and physical integrity and women's rights and family rights in this state that, say, a Texas does. If there's any mass of people milling around the Capitol grounds in Charleston, West Virginia, it will be a mass milling around of a bunch of people saying, save the fetuses, and then they'll get in their cars and drive back home to mountaintop removal country where the fetuses are being poisoned, but they don't care because they're friends of coal. That's how that works around here. I just wanted to share that little moment with you, because one state over, Ken Cuccinelli is the Attorney General of Virginia, and he hopes to be the governor. And he's a big fan of those crisis pregnancy centers that aren't clinics that deal with women's health care issues, aren't even clinics at all, and are, in fact, weird little propaganda mills for trying to scare people who don't know the facts about reproductive choice into having a baby for Jesus. So this comes from Salon. This is what goes on in crisis pregnancy centers. It's a result of a counseling session. That's what they call them when a pregnant woman walks into a crisis counseling center. Praise Jesus, pass me the snake. This is the kind of crap that goes on. NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia covertly recorded a counseling session at a Virginia center. And this is what the woman was told. Condoms are naturally porous and do not protect against sexually transmitted diseases. You know where they got that from, right? There are some condoms that are made of natural, like, lambskin or something. And they say, you know, for protection against, for prevention of pregnancy, will not protect against STDs because it is a semipermeable membrane. It's like skin. You can sweat skin. You can sweat out of your skin, but nothing goes through your skin. You get the idea. It's lambskin. All condoms are naturally porous and do not protect against STDs. Take one of those little latex or non-latex thingies and hold it, and see if it'll hold water. See, then turn it inside out and see if it holds water that way. These Christians are, of course, being Christians, liars. Then this. Women who have taken the birth control pill for 4 years prior to their first pregnancy have a 46% increased risk of breast cancer. Again, this is a... What's the word? I want to be thoughtful here. What's the word I'm looking for? This is an effing lie. Yeah. Having an abortion will damage all of your future relationships. Because, you know, you'll be there, you'll be laying back and thinking of England, or maybe pondering beige. I'll paint the ceiling beige, as right, and you won't be able to think about anything. No, pretty soon you'll go from beige, I'll paint the ceiling beige, to my poor baby! And then this. If you have an abortion, and this isn't just Virginia, okay? This isn't just Virginia. This is I'm sure the same, because this is an industry. This information is passed out, is generated from a central location and passed out to all these crisis pregnancy religion centers. The same kind of crap's being talked at the crisis pregnancy center in Alabama and the crisis pregnancy center in New York, and yes, there are. And Texas, and Louisiana, and L.A., because there are. If you have an abortion, now, before I go any further, we're going to do a little thought experiment if we can. Guys are welcome to do this too, because this is a matter of common humanity, not gender. Imagine that you are in a situation in your life unlike any that you have ever been in before. You're pregnant. Maybe you're a teenager. Maybe you're pregnant for the first time, or maybe you're married and you've got all the kids you want, but you're pregnant and you don't want to be pregnant. And somehow or another, maybe your preacher, or maybe a concerned friend who's a Bible-believing, born-again Christian, suggests you go to the Crisis Pregnancy Center. See, that's deceptive advertising. It's not a crisis pregnancy center. It's a religion pregnancy advocating center, or a religious anti-abortion center, maybe would be more appropriate. But yes, this too. If you have an abortion, you will see that child's soul again in the future. And this is the quote from the recording. At the end of the world, you're going to know that was my child that I chose to kill. The same Salon article notes a quote from a New York Times editorial that a woman wrote about her experience with a crisis pregnancy center in Iowa. They're there, too. I was cautioned that abortions caused breast cancer, even though the National Cancer Institute has found serious flaws in all research that suggests so. I was warned that I would inevitably suffer from post-abortion stress syndrome, even though the American Psychological Association says there is no evidence of increased mental health problems among women who have an abortion in the first trimester. I was told that I would not hear this information from doctors because doctors make money performing abortions and would lie about the procedure's risks. Well, there are some lying doctors out there. One of them just got arrested for deliberately misdiagnosing cancer. But oddly enough, the religion industry isn't out there picketing his office. They're picketing some women's reproductive health center somewhere. So that's the kind of... imagine that, Christians lying. So juxtapose that, if you will, against some actual, real live, not kidding, facts. Those facts come from the University of California, San Francisco. Liberals! And it's based on actual interviews with actual women who had actual abortions. Now, all that poppycock about how you'll see the soul of that little baby you killed is precisely that. But what is not poppycock is that based on real scientific work, researchers at the University of California, San Francisco have discovered that 1 week after having an abortion, the vast majority of women report feeling... Okay, this is the part. It's like the SAT test. We'll fill in a blank. 1 week after having an abortion, the majority of women report feeling A, guilt, B, suicidal ideations, C, nothing, D, relief! The answer is D, relief. And almost to a woman, they felt like the decision that they had made was the right decision. And this isn't any little pissant study of 15 women standing around the Tasty Freeze, okay? This is 800 women who had abortions between 2008 and 2010. It actually was kind of like an SAT question because they were presented six emotions to choose from: relief, happiness, regret, guilt, sadness, and anger. How about that? Even in a situation where the emotions presented, there are four out of six, two-thirds of the possible choices are all negative, and only one-third are positive. Positive still won. And this is apparently part of a larger 5-year study on the emotional and economic consequences of either receiving or being denied an abortion in the United States. 90%, not just a majority, 90% of the women who had abortions chose the word relief to describe how they felt after they had it. 90%. Of the women who checked off one of the two-thirds boxes, things like, regret, guilt, sadness, and anger, 80% of the women who ticked off one of those boxes still said that regardless of having a negative feeling like that, they knew they had done the right thing. Now, bear in mind, this was a scientific study, so the scientists did not go out to the local satanic worship center and interview only Satanist women. Again, this is part of a larger study that goes on for 5 years. Yeah, but that was California women. God-fearing women from Mississippi stand. They know that they're supposed to feel... Wait, why ain't shame in there? Dang it! It's a skewed study. They didn't get... They got to choose from relief and happiness and regret and guilt and sadness and anger, but there wasn't no shame in there for these harlot women. If shame had been in there, it'd have been 100% shame, because you can't go through one of these without feeling shame, because you're going to see that little soul of that little baby in the world to come at the end times. And you know what? When you're standing up there at the throne of judgment, and you're standing there and they're saying, should we let her in or should we cast her down to the barbecue pit? That little infant's going to come up and say, throw mommy in the barbecue pit, Jesus. Well, we understand now they skewed the results because they kept the shame out. But no, the fact of the matter is, all kidding aside, women just feel relief. Relief. Yeah. Oh, for heaven's sakes, Cassie. What's with the music, Bob? Either Australian for the Aussie Palin or country music because it's what's best. This is old people music. Cassie. The Grateful Dead are not country music. B, neither are the Drive-By Truckers. Drive-By Truckers are one of the hippest bands in America today, if we're still using that word hip. They're hot. And it's most definitely not country music. Some of the most grinded out rock and roll you're going to find anywhere these days. No, I will not be playing Robin Thicke. Just no. And not that Cassie was suggesting I should, but I mean, that's what's hot. I mean, every bar I walked past in Washington, D.C. while I was up there seemed like it was blaring out Blurred Lines. Robert, with a little more information for us from the Australian Electoral Commission. The Australian Electoral Commission will decide if Stephanie Bannister can run in the federal election. Candidates are disqualified if they've been convicted of a crime or about to be sentenced to jail. Stephanie Bannister has an upcoming court appearance prior to the election, so we might not hear of her again, let's hope. Yeah, and those charges, remember, those charges stem from her putting stickers saying, halal taxes support terrorism, even if they don't. Very, very, very stacked up stacks this evening. A lot of stuff. Some more national than others. and some that seem very, very local. And some of the historic stuff that I... well, you know how I feel about it. The history stuff. Let's do that story real quick. Agnes sent this along to me. She finds cool stuff. We know that Christianity killed something in excess of 40 to 50,000 people just between the 16th and 17th centuries. These weren't wars. This was the attempt by the church to stomp out what it considered to be witchcraft. And there were witch hunts. 40 to 50,000 people were killed in the name of Jesus to stop witchcraft. It almost goes without saying that the vast majority of those killed were, of course, women. You know, women who did things like midwife births, who did things like suggesting that bathing would make you healthier, which of course denied the biblical truth of demon possession, which is really what makes you sick, or ill humors, or black bile, perhaps. In Norway, they've paid particular attention to those horrors. And in the far Arctic north of Norway, in a county called Finnmark, a memorial has gone up. In that tiny, tiny little area, I mean, it may be large land-wise, but it's not particularly populous, a memorial has gone up, a giant memorial, above the place where so many, nearly 100, women and men were burned alive. The memorial is 145 meters long. Historian Liv Helene Willemsen said that when you go in, you get this feeling that it's long, a long and painful way to go. The memorial is called the Stilneset Memorial to the Victims of the Witch Trials in Varda. And historian Liv Helene Willemsen has spent years researching the Christian murders of those 100 or so human beings in the north of Norway. 135 people were tried on charges of witchcraft between 1600 and 1692. Of those 135, 91, most of them women, were burned alive in the name of Jesus. Vardo is a 3.5-hour flight from Oslo. Flight. So you get the idea how dedicated the church was in transmitting its information regarding how dangerous women were and how prone women were to be in congress with Satan. Of all of Norway's witch hunt persecutions and murders took place in Varda. It was, that area was thought of as the gates of hell. Because for some reason or another, in that era in Europe, the church, which was of course run by Italians, was pretty sure that the gates of hell were way up north. And so, where more likely than a place near the Arctic itself for the gates of hell to be? And so they worried down in warmer places like the south of France, Avignon, or Rome. They worried that northern peoples were more prone to selling their souls to the devil in exchange for the powers and wealth. What kind of... Up on the Arctic Circle, what the hell kind of powers can Satan give you besides not freezing to damn death? Oh, well, you know, you can talk to the reindeer. Asriel the reindeer. Had a very sulfurous... Never mind. The memorial itself is a corridor constructed out of sailcloth and held up by an external wooden frame and a cube-shaped black glass building. It was designed by a Swiss architect named Peter Sumthor. The interior is dimly lit. Extracts from the court cases of all the 91 people executed for witchcraft are printed on little plaques lining the walls, giving little glimpses of the personal backgrounds and fates of those killed. I'd love to I wish I had to share with you what those plaques say. Bare bulbs hang in front of the plaques. All that remains of the memory of a life of 91 human beings, mostly women, burned alive by order of the Majesty of the Church in the name of Jesus. I mention that because Ken Cuccinelli and Morrissey in West Virginia and the goobers in Texas and all the anti-choice people are not that far from the 16th and 17th century mindsets that led women to be burned alive on the Arctic Circle and, well, you know, about 59,900 others throughout the rest of the body of Europe. Not a hell of a lot of difference at all. Time marches on, but all too often hatred stands stock still, and fear stands beside it, and ignorance leads it. So, if you happen to go by a women's reproductive health center and you see a bunch of protesters, just remember, they are the progeny of people who used to set fire to human beings, women. Jack in Shreveport noting, Bob, you know, Italians going to Norway to kill evil strange women kind of sounds like we've got to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here, or whatever that phrase was. And the Muslims are portrayed as evil. Yeah, what was Mike Huckabee's phrase? Uncorked animals. Well, there you go. But then again, you wouldn't really expect, would you? You wouldn't expect Mike Huckabee to talk trash on Muslims and then actually say, yeah, but you know, Christianity has our own problems. We murdered somewhere. And actually, that's a low number, that 60,000 number murdered for witchcraft, because when you take everything into account, it probably gets closer to a million. You see, when the church wanted to murder somebody for witchcraft, well, that was one thing, but there were not nearly the niceties involved when they just wanted to run a pogrom against the Jewish community, for instance. Or start a crusade. And you know what happened to the fall of Jerusalem, right? When the Christians did take Jerusalem, didn't hold it for very long, but they did take it. And where Jerusalem had been held by some Muslim caliphate for quite some time, Jews and Christians and Muslims all lived there. When the Christians took Jerusalem, they slaughtered every Muslim and every Jew in sight. Religion of peace. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, this is Edward.
Hey, Edward, how are you?
Pretty good. I just have a couple of little tidbits. I wanted to let you know that Kathy Adams, the former Texas Republican Party chairman, believes that immigration is satanic.
Right, well, and well, the biometric part of the immigration bill, yes, that's the mark of the beast.
Yeah, mm-hmm, absolutely. And another little tidbit I heard on the Internet a few days ago, this was in Eastern Europe, and they had an election, and you were required to not cover your head unless it was for a religious reason or a medical reason. And that seemed to work out all right. And this guy comes to vote, and he's got a spaghetti strainer on his head.
Yes.
I didn't make this up.
No. I know the story.
Oh, you do? Well, good.
Yeah. A colander, for all intent. Isn't that what we call him, a colander?
Yeah.
Wore a colander and won the right to wear it because it was for a religious purpose because he was a Pastafarian.
I heard that he was a devotee of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Well, that's exactly what it is, a follower of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, and I have the Flying Spaghetti Monster here on the wall, courtesy many years ago of News Ninja Susan. A follower of the Flying Spaghetti Monster is known as a Pastafarian.
Oh, my. Well, I guess I'm one of those.
Well,
I've been called worse.
You know what? Ramen. I mean, you know what happens when you know about the Pastafarian afterlife, right, Edward?
No, I haven't heard that.
Well, when Pastafarians die, they go to Flying Spaghetti Monster Heaven, and they get a beer volcano and a stripper factory.
Oh my word!
I don't think I've ever made you snort before, Edward. That was charming.
No, yeah, I sound like Geraldine. or whatever her name was, that character that Lily Tomlin played. When she'd say, Mr. Fubuckley.
Yeah, right.
I do
have one question about Kathy Adams because she's worried about the biometrics, and it's either going to be a tattoo on the back of her hand or up on her forehead, you know, where maybe even her bangs won't be able to hide it. I have a question. If the little rice grain-sized biometric device was to be implanted in a piece of reasonably expensive jewelry from the jewelry counter at Needless Markup in Dallas, would she be okay with it then?
Of course.
As long as it was tasteful.
It had to be tasteful. In fact, I think probably Joan Rivers, who was trying to get some of her jewelry, having these I've fallen and I can't get up alerts put into, her motto was, I've fallen and I look fabulous. That's what this woman would do. She just wants to look fabulous.
Yes, sure. But she doesn't want to do it if it's going to involve a tattoo on the back of her hand or on her forehead. I mean, that is just gauche.
Well, she's probably got tattoos in places you don't even want to know about.
Stop that. You're just wicked.
I know. I'm going to slap my wrist when I hang up.
Well, not too hard.
I won't. You all take care, and thanks for all the info.
Well, thank you, Edward, and have a wonderful evening down in Dallas.
Well, let's see. It's 100 and how many degrees now?
Oh!
Yeah.
And they see, that's the thing. The church went looking for the gates of hell up in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, silly church.
Yeah, they went in the wrong direction.
You're probably sitting on top of it, aren't you?
Yeah, almost. It feels like it. I don't sit down outside anymore. Everything you sit on is too hot.
Well, being as how it sits there, no. Just keep your folding chair in the shade and take it outside with you.
That's right, absolutely. Well, right. Take care.
You have a good evening,
Thanks
Edward.
For the information.
Oh, my pleasure.
Bye.
Bye now. Oh, Yeah. Mark of the Beast. You know, I don't often play audio from other shows, but there's Joe Rogan does a pretty good job from time to time with his podcast, whatever we're going, you know, video thing. But he said something the other day that kind of had some resonance. And I offer this up in consideration of the people who are spending all their time worrying about whether or not they've unintentionally picked up the Mark of the Beast or some such. This was pretty good, really.
Well, it's weird. What we worry about is weird, because the chemtrails, if the government really was spraying something, that is something we should worry about. But stop. What are the effects? I don't feel anything. If they are really doing this on a regular basis, are they just cooling the water? What is exactly going on? Now let's stop and look at the shit that we're not paying attention to. We're pumping like raw sewage into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Like people are just shitting into the ocean. There's like boats that are burning diesel fuel. There's
cruise
other
ships.
Boats with giant nets that are killing every fucking fish within its, you know, whatever stretch they've got these goddamn killer nets set up for. Just sucking fish out of it, throwing plastic in there. There's a gigantic
the Great Pacific
patch.
Garbage patch. There's one in the Great Lakes, too. There's one in every body of fucking
God,
water, dude.
It's so crazy.
I saw this TED talk from this woman talking about plastic, and she was saying 20 years ago this research team went out fucking hundreds of miles away from the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, and the fish that they were fishing full of plastic particles, and also this guy went down to the bottom of the ocean where they were, and it was covered in plastic bags. And this was 20 years ago. Can you imagine how it is now? I mean, this is the shit that we should be concerned
about.
That has a certain... You know, and it's not necessarily about the chemtrails, but it's that concept that we are fascinated by stuff over here when, you know, right just back outside our peripheral vision, the whole planet's getting effed sideways. And by way of example, I had I don't know how often he reads his email, so maybe he didn't even see it. But my buddy and AIC campaign brother, Mickey McCoy, whom you can see, by the way, in the history... This is not a paid advertisement. I wish that it was. Whom you can see in the History Channel reality TV program, Hatfields and McCoy's White Lightning, airing at 10 p.m. this evening, Eastern Time. I checked with Mickey because Mickey is the former mayor of Inez, Kentucky. And Inez is in Martin County, Kentucky. You might recall that back in the early aughts, Martin County, Kentucky dodged a great damn big bullet when a mountain blew out and sent toxic coal waste liquid all over the county. And, of course, later on, certain officials with the Mine Safety and Health Administration said, you know, this was a function. This was because Massey Energy was really negligent about what they blew the mountain out because they were pumping so much waste into the mountain that the mountain couldn't stand it anymore. And after it had been hollowed out from coal mining anyway, I can drive 30 minutes down the mountain because it's my mountain, down the mountain, into the area just between Fayette and Kanawha counties, West Virginia, and there are all these concrete Jersey walls up because that mountain is falling apart because it's had the bejesus blasted out of it and filth pumped into it, and you get the idea. And it's nasty when it happens. So that happened, 2002 in Martin County, Kentucky. Well, they can't do mountaintop removal fast enough in Martin County, Kentucky. Does anybody out there watch the Joe Rogan thing? Anybody want to shoot him a note and say, speaking of things we ought to be paying attention to but aren't, why don't you give Bob a call and let him tell you all about mountaintop removal? You'll poop yourself when you hear about this. Martin County, Kentucky, like so many Appalachian counties, has one high school. Now, that probably sounds weird if you live in a metropolitan area and there's probably five high schools within a, or 20 within a 10-mile radius. I don't know. They got one high school. And in rural places, I don't know about cities and so forth, but in rural areas, high schools are sort of the glue that holds the community together, because generally everybody went to that high school. And so there's that common bond of everybody knows everybody, and, oh yeah, you had Mrs. Schmedelecker for biology and blah, 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 blah. And when you lose your high school, you, in many ways, lose your community. When Marsh Fork High School, was it Marsh Fork High School? Was closed down in the Coal River Valley. Well, it was a real blow. We're still, even though the rest of the country has kind of given up on the idea of school consolidation, we here are still all, we're just over the moon about it, and we love the idea of building big Franken schools and busing children 2.5 hours each way to get to it. They're trying to do that with the little failing high school up the road here. In fact, they offered to build us a Franken school, and the voters for the bond levy, the voters went to the polls and said, no, no thanks, pass. And so the State Board of Education immediately declared the Fayette County school system a failure and moved in and took it over. It's a mess. But that's not, that's, but back to Inez, Kentucky. The news story from WYMT says simply, the doors of the only high school in Martin County will remain closed this school year. And this was on August the 1st. The school board voted tonight to close it after concerns were raised that nearby blasting was too dangerous. See, Martin County, Kentucky, has been just blown to smithereens in order to get at little six-inch seams of coal that do nothing but provide a profit for the coal companies and the international finance geniuses, Credit Agricole and Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank and UBS and Royal Bank of Scotland and Bank of America, who finance these dodges. It's, this is one of those little journalism moments, though, too. The school board voted tonight to close it after concerns were raised that nearby blasting was too dangerous. What, are they building a road? It's a mountainous area. It's Appalachia. Maybe they were blasting away some mountainside to build a highway. No. Oh. They're saying construction site. A nearby construction site. And if, in fact, it is a construction site, because, see, that's the way the coal industry likes to describe a mountaintop removal complex. It's a construction site. All the blasting has rendered the school building itself uninhabitable. It was Sheldon Clark High School. Hundreds of people came supporting their school and supporting their kids. I hate that we have to lose Sheldon Clark. I hate that it has to come to this, but right now we're kind of in an emergency situation, said one concerned parent. After hours of questions and concerns, the school board made it clear they felt they had no choice but to close the doors of Sheldon Clark High School for the coming school year. Sheldon Clark principal, Robbie Fletcher, said, when someone tells you they're going to let you take care of their child, that's the highest compliment you can have. And when somebody gives you that responsibility to take care of their child, you have to make some tough decisions sometimes. You know, Inez, Kentucky is a beautiful little community. Dr. Fletcher continued, our kids are resilient. We always talk about being ready. I don't know if you can ever be ready for this, but if there's anybody that could be, it'll be the Sheldon Clark Cardinal kids. Their focus right now is getting the students into a safer environment away from construction blasting and out of a school that may not withstand it. The high school students will now be at Inez Middle School. The middle school students will attend Warfield Middle School. The first day of school has been moved back to August 21st. Do not enter signs have been plastered all over Sheldon Clark High School. School janitor Mark Spence said, "It's just business as usual. The blasts go on all the time." From the nearby construction site. The nearby construction site blasting did send boulders down the hill behind the school, and with recent engineering reports claiming any blast could weaken the structure, school district officials wanted to act. "I think this recent event has really brought some closure to what we need to do." Officials say all blasting has stopped at that site until further notice. The concerns were that the walls of the school could cave in. "The concerns that we have is due to the safety of the building, primarily because of the age of the building, the original construction, and design of the building." That, according to Martin County Superintendent of Schools, Stephen Meadows. "The walls of the school are cracked, the floors cracked and getting worse. And yeah, they blame it on road construction and blasting nearby. The blasting is going on just on the other side of a mountain beside the school." If you read the engineering report, it said that the school could not, lacked the structural integrity, that if you had a significant seismic wind or blast event, the school could possibly collapse. Road construction. This story may not sound like much. It's probably not a story that's going to be covered on any other talk radio program, conversation radio, what have you. They probably talked about it to one extent or another on local radio, if they still have local radio in Inez. But it's a bit of an onion because it's got layer after layer after layer. I love you, Carl Sagan. Peace be upon you. Billions and billions of dollars have been blasted and gouged and dragged and dug out of the mountains around Inez, Kentucky. Why, then, considering the so-called natural resources wealth that is present in a place like, or has been since it was taken away, why then does a county with so much natural resources wealth have a school that is so old that it could collapse at any time? And I'm not willing to buy in on the, "Well, we just didn't want a new one. We like that old building just fine. I got a lot of memories there." Mm-mm. This is part of what is called the resource curse. And if a blast from the so-called road construction site could cause the building to collapse, that's not just because the building's old. That's because Martin County, Kentucky, has been blasted and blasted and blasted and blasted for coal. For for more than 100 years. And a little thing like closing the high school, well, it doesn't look like much from somewhere else in the country. But it's a big damn deal because it is a part of the plan of overall depopulation of central Appalachia. I was thinking the other night, you know, West Virginia used to have 5 members of the House of Representatives. There were 5 congressional districts in West Virginia. There are now 3. That, of course, is based upon population. And the population of this state has died off and gone elsewhere, to the point that we now have only 3 congressional districts. The first congressional district has Nick Rahal. It is the sickest congressional district in the entire United States. I don't mean that it's perverse or anything. I mean that it is the most physically ill congressional district in the United States. The second most physically ill congressional district in the United States is the one in Kentucky that includes Inez and Martin County. It's represented by a man named Hal Rogers, a very powerful, powerful Republican. Both districts can truthfully assert that they have pumped billions of dollars into Wall Street and coal operator profits and pockets. But the only high school in Martin County, Kentucky, is so damaged by generations of blasting around it that a seismic wind or a big blasting event could cause the walls to cave in on eager young scholars. And there's no plan to reopen it. And there's no money to build a new one. If there is to be money, the people, I'm not sure how the Commonwealth of Kentucky's school funding scheme works, but the people of Martin County, Kentucky will have to approve the building of a new one. And the coal industry will not pay a damn nickel. Or if asked to, will perhaps politely decline. Or maybe the PR department will say, "Boss, you know, that might not be a bad idea to pony up a couple $1 million to build a new high school. We can plaster it with Friends of Coal stickers and Coal Keeps Lights On. And even though them people there is breathing all them blasting dust and so forth, they won't know what hit them." Because the blasting is toxic. And going back to what Joe Rogan said, it's stuff we're not even thinking about. A whole bunch of the people who are concerned about mountaintop removal aren't even thinking about blasting dust. Here in the United States, we have this thing called the Clean Air Act. And it is supposed to keep industrial types from pumping the atmosphere full of poisons. There is not a mountaintop removal site anywhere in central Appalachia that is required to have a Clean Air Act permit. Now, a coal prep plant does, because they use a bunch of diesel fuel. You know, they got trucks coming in and out, lots of exhaust, lots of fumes. But a mountaintop removal site? No. Oh, by the way, what's the blasting stuff? What do they blast with? Diesel fuel! No Clean Air Act permit. A lot of good, well-intentioned, good-hearted activists say, "Look at what they're doing to the water." By the time you can look and smell at what they're doing to the water, it's too damn late, and you're already poisoned. And while you were looking down at the tomato soup-colored water and smelling the stench of rotten eggs coming out of your faucet, the whole time you've been breathing tiny, itsy-bitsy little particles, less than 2.5 microns in size, less than 1/100th the diameter of a human hair. the size of a virus, and it's been bioaccumulating in your body, and it's so tiny it passes through cell walls, and it passes through the lungs, and it passes into the, and it goes everywhere in your body. And one day you're sitting at the doctor wondering why you keep going. And he says, well, that's because you've got cancer. And probably 99% of the people in this region go, God's will. But there are a few people who say, hey, look, what about the dust? What about the dust? If you look on my Facebook page, it's just called Bob Kincaid. Yesterday, at about 8 minutes past noon, Vernon Haltom, a dear friend of mine and the executive director of Cold River Mountain Watch, posted a series of quotes. Blasting dust won't harm you because it dissipates in the wind. Blasting dust makes sludge dams stronger. Blasting had nothing to do with it. The trees made your well go dry. Our state agency, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, entrusted to protect the people and environment, sure tells some doozies. How gullible do they think you are? The DEP, the Department of Environmental Protection of West Virginia, has spent at least $860,000 of taxpayer money defending the coal industry, suing the EPA, and opposing citizen efforts to enforce water quality standards. They've also spent untold staff time and tax dollars assuring residents that their concerns of blasting dust, black water, blasting damage, and flooding are unfounded, and they've discouraged them from working with groups including Coal River Mountain Watch. Vernon writes simply, can you help us people stand up for their health? Can you help us help people stand up for their health, their homes, and their families? Since we don't have the industry's millions or the DEP's tax money, we rely on your support to do our work. Please contribute whatever you can, even $10 or $5 is much appreciated, at crmw.net/donate.php. And there's a photograph. There's a photograph associated with Vernon's post. It's a photograph of what used to be the old, I think, yeah, this is the old Marsh Fork Elementary School. The children have a new school now because of the work that Coal River Mountain Watch, Bo Webb, and a number of other heroes did to make that happen. The Annenberg Foundation ponied up a couple of million dollars to help build the school that Senator Joe Manchin said West Virginia couldn't afford, even though people had been dying at the school over the last several years. Cancers, weird cancers, bizarre cancers, science fiction movie cancers. Joe said, we just don't have the money. And the Annenberg Foundation stepped up and said, well, we got some of it. And then lo and behold, Joe Manchin said, well, we found some, we shook out the sofa and we got some too. And then lo and behold, Massey Energy said, well, I reckon we could probably scrape together a couple million. But this is the Marsh Fork Elementary School. I know you probably don't like Facebook, but just the same, just run over to my page. It's an open page. Anybody can go there. Bob Kincaid. And it's a photograph of the old Marsh Fork Elementary School. And the photograph that you'll see there, and I know talking about photographs on the radio is dancing about architecture, and it's probably bad radio generally. But the photograph does not look like, it doesn't look like, quite honestly, and I mean no criticism, it doesn't look like a very good photograph. Because it looks like somebody didn't quite know how to work the focus button. Because everything's all, I don't know, hazy. And what's left of the mountain in the background just sort of fades into the distance. A Well, that's not because somebody wasn't a good photographer. That is because a blast had just taken place above that school. You may recall in years past I talked considerably about that school. 2.8 billion gallons of toxic waste sit behind a dirt and rock dam immediately above the site of what was Marsh Fork Elementary School. Dust was everywhere. That photo looks all out of focus, or maybe somebody smeared some, I don't know, is eating fried chicken and smeared, got some grease on the lens. No, that's blasting dust. Those are billions upon billions upon trillions of those little tiny 2.5 microns and less in size pieces of jagged glass from blasted sandstone, and pieces of little teeny tiny detritus from exploded diesel fuel containing these things called polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons that when they get into your lungs eventually pile up until you're sitting at the doctor and they go, well, that's cancer. That's what makes that photo look so strange. The caption to the photo says, West Virginia DEP says not to worry about blasting dust because it dissipates in the wind. We disagree. Please help at crmw.net/donate.php. Thanks. Sometimes it's a good thing for me to remind you why every night I say at the end of the program, thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch. They live there. They work there. And they have never run from this struggle, not once, no, never. Judy Bonds engaged in this struggle until the last breath ran out of her body. She was the executive director of Coal River Mountain Watch until cancer got her. And this is one of those larger overarching problems. I wish to God or the flying spaghetti monster or the goddess of irony or some invisible deity that we here at the Horn were independently funded and not constantly reaching out to you to help us keep things going here. Because the one thing I would rather do than anything else right now is to say, and I'm saying it, and it's the devil in the deep blue sea. It's Scylla and Charybdis, rock and a hard place. Coal River Mountain Watch struggles for survival. You know, for a long time, Coal River Mountain Watch was a partial supporter of this program. Help pick up the slack in any given month. Well, they haven't been able to for more than a year now because times are hard. And it's one of the things you don't know, but for more than a year now, you and what little bit that Agnes and I can put into the effort are the only reason this program continues. And just as a gentle reminder, more time has been spent talking about mountaintop removal on this network and on this program than by any other broadcast outfit on planet Earth. And you make that possible. And with a Finn or a 10 or a Jackson, you keep Coal River Mountain Watch going too. So I don't know what to tell you. We try to raise funds on any given night, but I see something like this and I'm reminded of all the work that's going on thanklessly. Not thanklessly to you, but I think about, for instance, the big greens that are wallowing in money and do nothing to help Coal River Mountain Watch keep going. And when I say big greens, you know who the hell I'm talking about. Coal River Mountain Watch is another one of those organizations, just like the Horn. We're running on the same operating philosophy. If it's going to get done, the people themselves are going to have to do it, because we've waited around and we've looked and we've looked to people for help, and it's been we've looked to big organizations for help, organizations that say, oh, we want to save the planet! And they talk a mighty fine game, but they don't play it worth diddly. So yeah, go to my Facebook page and have a look at that photograph. And if you can, throw a little help toward Coal River Mountain Watch's way. Oh, thank you, Will. Let me see if we got the right photo there. Yeah, there it is. There it is. Will has found it in the chat room. Timeline photos for Coal River Mountain Watch. You don't even necessarily have to go to my page. You can go to Coal River Mountain Watch's. It matters. And when you see the dust in that photo, you'll understand the blasting dust that I'm talking about that covers every mountaintop removal community. Gritty and oily and filthy and grimy and toxic and deadly. Yeah. So, let's take a little break. 13 minutes past the hour. Take a little break and we'll come back to some other stories. Story from Brooklyn. Story from Jamaica, Queens. Story from Arizona. A story from Iowa. Plenty still to talk about, and you know the number, 304-658-3333. And on the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Email, Twitter, Facebook, however you want to participate, you are more than welcome to do so. Jump right in. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Thursday, August 8, 2013.
The record or near records being reported from year to year are no longer anomalies or exceptions.
Record-breaking weather extremes are the new normal.
Global climate is actually declining in temperature. Temperature's going down.
Surprise! Conservative media disinforms the public. Fossil fuel industry showers Republicans with campaign cash. Plus,
experts find the source of the problem, a so-called Fatberg.
The Fatberg that threatened London.
All of those threats and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And of course, these mandates and these wind farms are all based on this, fraudulent science.
Did you say wind farms or, wind bags, Congressman Kevin Cramer of North Dakota? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, this audio unearthed from Congressman Kevin Cramer, the only congressman from North Dakota, a Republican, is amazing. His denial, not even his denial, his claims that the globe is cooling This is how he is misinforming his constituents across the entire state of North Dakota.
Yeah, I know. And credit goes to Brad Johnson of Hill Heat for digging that one up. And he's not the only one. It's conservative media that does it, too. But we'll have more on that in a moment. First, the planet has entered a new normal of extreme weather, says the American Meteorological Society and NOAA in their latest State of the Climate report.
With the number of extreme events cited in this report, the high number of extreme events in 2011 caution us to be looking at a likely future where extremes are more frequent and more intense than what we have accounted for in the past.
That was Jackie Richter-Mendt, research civil engineer with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, on the record temperature changes in the Arctic. The State of the Climate report shows 2012 was a record year, one of the 10 warmest years on record globally. Arctic sea ice and Greenland saw record melting. Sea levels reached a record high in 2012, and sea surface temperatures also climbed significantly. Scientists warn these are the new normal.
Yeah, but Congressman Kevin Cramer from North Dakota says,
we know the global climate's cooling, number one, we know that.
And he's wrong, says the American Geophysical Union, the professional scientific organization of Earth scientists. On Monday, they released their most blunt official position statement on climate change yet, saying, quote, humanity is the major influence on the global climate change observed over the last 50 years, and human-induced climate change requires urgent action. But the public does not know this. In an interview with NPR, climate scientist Amy Clement said,
people say, oh, what do you do? I talk about, I'm a climate scientist. Oh, is global warming happening? And, I mean, that is so well established in the scientific literature, and somehow the public still has the perception that that is not well established.
That somehow is actually conservative media. A new study attempting to find the source of public confusion over climate change pins the blame squarely on conservative media outlets misinforming the public about the facts, like, say, promoting paid climate deniers as objective sources rather than actual scientists. The study confirms previous findings showing that the more time people watch Fox News, the more wrong things they believe.
Can I just say here, that's not conservative media, that's right-wing, fossil fuel-funded media. Nothing conservative about them, to be frank.
That's true. And the disinformation comes from members of Congress as well, as you heard, Representative Kevin Cramer of North Dakota, who believes that global warming is fraudulent science intended to promote wind farms. The fossil fuel industry is very happy about that.
Skeptics of global warming like to say follow the money, but they never follow the money, the real money, back to the fossil fuel industry, the most profitable industry in the history of civilization.
That's right. The Center for Responsive Politics reports that 85% of campaign donations this cycle from the oil, gas, and mining industries went to Republican candidates.
Follow the money.
85%. But there's some good news. Seattle is pioneering community solar. Seattle City Light, Seattle's publicly owned electric utility, is installing community solar panels on city-owned property, even on small surfaces like picnic shelters, allowing the public to subscribe and get clean energy. Finally,
a so-called fatberg.
The fatberg that almost busted sewers in London.
A 15-ton ball of fat, wet wipes, and sanitary products has been clogging up the sewers in southwest London.
It's the size of a double-decker bus. This is why they say keep fat and grease out of your kitchen sink, because there is no magic sewer fairy. The infrastructure just can't handle it.
Yeah, these photos are really gross.
Disgusting.
Fatberg, right ahead. To check that out and get more on the other stories we covered and those we didn't have time for, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Remember, you can find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. If the gods are with us, we're heading into the mountains, so we're going to be off for a bit. We will see you soon. Until then, from bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Listen, girls and boys, I got one stick. Give me
imagine, let me take a whiff quick, I'm gonna knock myself out. Yes, I'm gonna kill myself. I'm gonna knock myself out gradually by degrees. I started blowing my gauge and I was having my fun. I spied the police and I started to run. I was knocking myself out. Yes, I was killing myself. I was knocking myself out gradually by degrees. But the very moment I looked around, a mind say, little throw that gauge on the ground. The police passed and said, kill yourself. The police passed and said, kill yourself. He said, knock yourself out, live gradually by degrees.
Request from last night, Lil Green, knocking myself out, 22 minutes after the hour, about 35 or so minutes left in this Thorn in the Side Thursday edition of Conversation Radio. Jump right in if you want to, 304-658-3333, or Bob Kincaid Horn on the Skype machine. And yeah, Will in the chat room got a look at the photo over at CRMW's Cold River Mountain Watch's Facebook page. It looks like a picture shot during a dust storm. Yeah, it doesn't exactly dissipate, does it? Well, I mean, it does. It dissipates. It dissipates into the bodies of unborn babies. It dissipates into the wombs of the mothers carrying those unborn babies. It dissipates into the gallbladders of children who wind up having their gallbladders out before they're old enough to get a learner's permit. Yeah, the dust dissipates. What the hell, huh? Meanwhile, I remind you that Joe Manchin, in an op-ed in the Beckley paper a couple of days ago, said, when it comes to coal, President Obama and the EPA are clearly hell-bent on putting the coal industry out of business forever. You know who goes out of business forever? People who breathe blasting dust. Just saying. Yeah. Let's see. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for the song.
Oh, I'm glad. I hope you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed part of it because I got up to make myself a drink.
Well, dang it.
But, you know, I still listen to it. I got another one for you that you'd love, and that's Lil Johnson.
A lot of Lils out there.
A lot of Lils. They both were good women. But this was called, let's see, Press My Button or Ring My Bell.
Okay. We'll put that on the list.
Put it on the list, and I think you'll find it very edifying. And
when
you know,
chuckle like that, you give me pause, Jim.
Oh, I think that, you know, it's nothing wrong with listening to some blues music from back in the 20s and 30s, and you think of the conditions in which they lived, and you know, the whole genre and how it was created, and it's just part of our history and part of our culture, part of our heritage. And, you know, sometimes I get a little bawdy, but it was like that, you know?
Well, life is like that.
Of course. I mean, look at the story of Billie Holiday.
Oh, God.
Made so wonderful by that film, A Lady Sings the Blues with Diana Ross.
But in its own way, even that film didn't even scratch the surface.
Not really. The only place where Billie could even sing was in Provincetown, Massachusetts. Because her drug addiction problems had revoked her cabaret license, and that was the only place where she could come and make a living.
And even a phrase like that, cabaret license, Jim, what the...
Well, that's just a license the city of New York levied against establishments, and so that the people would, you know, that they could get a little bit of money. You know, it's all that. It's always in quest of money and all.
But when they decided to suppress your art...
They revoked the cabaret license. And you couldn't sing legally. And if you were caught singing, it was to the Hooskow.
Yep.
And in her case, it was to other institutions that weren't particularly nice. But nonetheless, I'm glad you played that. You've been going on along, saying a lot of things about some very serious items, and I didn't mean to.
Oh no, that's okay. I mean, we mix the serious and the silly and the upbeat and the downbeat together, and that's what makes good music.
Well, I think so. I mean, sometimes you can get so down and out, you just feel so bad, and then you need something that is a pick me up or whatever you want to call it, something to change the mood and. A little levity and a little handsome nostalgia.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, it's not like I'm asking you to play something of the stuff you've been hearing out of the places in Washington or whatever, but nonetheless, I think it's important that we remember a lot of these artists. As a matter of fact, there are two CDs out by them, and they're called the Copulating Blues.
Really?
Yeah. I have both of them. The Copulating Blues. And basically, these are remixed and remastered, you know, from that time.
Yeah, cleaned up. Yeah, you know, I don't mean.
So you can hear, you know, the piano, hear the vocalist and everything like that. And, it's been around a long time. But when Lil Johnson, and I guarantee you one thing, that young woman could sing. And she could just lay it down. That's all there is to it.
Well, it certainly sounds like it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the gentleman from Ohio remembered Lil
yeah.
Green from last night. And, you know, there are lots of other things that I'm sure that would come back into his memory because these things even preceded him.
Yeah.
But the reason, and this is just a personal story here, I helped a friend of mine make a film for a film class at the University of South Carolina. And basically, it was a stop animation type thing. We had a black coffee table. And the music was used were from reefer songs in the 1930s. And I helped her do this thing. Somehow, it was just amazing. She had such patience. But she could actually have a cigarette case open and joints would get out and dance and then do a overhead shoot like a Busby Berkeley thing of the, you know, how the girl.
Oh, with the legs and the designs and
the
geometry.
You got it. That thing took. Well, we shot a whole weekend doing it. I mean, it was just a lot of patience. And this is before a lot of things came in. This was back in 1978, I think. And
yeah, no CGI.
No. It was just pure animation stop. You know, click, you know, a camera with a trigger on it. And you'd have to move each character very, very carefully. But needless to say, Jane got an A+ for that one. That's for damn sure.
Well, good.
And it was well done. And you know, there was so much music and stuff that came out of the '20s and thirties. I mean, of course, I enthused about Cole Porter, and that's another genre. But nonetheless, there are a lot of things that were produced, and I'm glad they've remastered them and have put them out so that people won't forget them, because otherwise these people would have faded into absolute obscurity and no one would have ever heard or known who they were. Some of the singers like Lil Johnson, I don't even think they have a birth date or a death date for her. She's sort of like sang in Chicago and, you know, faded into the dustbin of history, so to speak. If it hadn't been for these recordings and so many other recordings, we'd lose a hell of a lot. We sure would.
Well, that was one of those cultural crossroads. The eat, drink, and be merry aspect of the 20s merged into the and this is the part where we die aspect of the 30s.
Yeah, times are hard. And one of the lyrics in one of the songs is times are hard, and they were.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, a lot of these songs had their beginnings in what we down south used to call piccolos. You ever heard that term?
Mm-mm, don't think so.
Piccolos, which were also called juke joints.
Oh, sure. Roadhouses.
Yeah, in which the black people would get together and sing their hearts out and try to forget their worries and pray.
And roadhouses, you know, so-called, well, rock and roll at Sun Records in Memphis was born out of the so-called race music of the South.
Yeah.
You know, I think Little Richard is still pissed off, and rightly so, because, you know, he said I invented rock and roll, they stole it from me.
Well, that's true. I saw him in Hartsfield Airport, and I don't know why, but there were some people up there making fun of him, and I really hated it. I mean, who can miss Little Richard? I mean, with his hair and all this kind of stuff.
Why would anybody in their right mind ever make fun of Little Richard?
I think because of the makeup and stuff like that, because, you know, he wore makeup and stuff like that and sort of stood out in the crowd, and I'll leave it at that.
Well, I guess they'd laugh at David Bowie, too. He took the makeup off, I reckon.
Yeah. I mean, I love Little Richard. I mean, you know, he's just, incredible. And just not to get too far away, but my late Aunt Madeline and her husband would go to New York frequently, and guess where they would end up every time they went?
Oh.
Cotton Club.
Sure.
Cat and Calloway.
And, you know, I was, I mentioned that one of my absolute favorite bloggers, Charlie Pierce, had a rock and roll post today that mentioned the Drive-By Truckers. Well, he nominated Johnny B. Goode by Chuck Berry as he says the song that damn sure should be the national anthem, the Great Mother Riff, and the finest statement of the American dream ever written. Maybe someday your name will be in lights. And Charlie said that maybe is what it's all about. You're not guaranteed anything, but by God, you've got a shot, even if you're only strumming down by the river.
Well, that's true. This is by the Drive-By Truckers.
Well, no, he's talking about Johnny B. Goode.
Johnny B. Goode.
The song he started with the Truckers was Carl Perkins' Cadillac, which is just it's genius. It's pure genius.
Well, you know who brought them on TV first, don't you? Don Imus, the Drive-By Truckers.
Was Imus the first? Because I know they did Letterman and. Yeah.
I mean, I know he was really promoted big, and had them on numerous occasions on his show.
Well, they're an awesome band.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I haven't listened to them a whole lot. I mean, I heard them on Imus. I haven't bought any of their CDs or whatever. But nonetheless, yes, you're right. Absolutely. Making their own contribution to segments of our musical heritage.
And my youngest, Doodle, is in an absolute frenzy to get to a Drive-By Truckers show. She wants to go. And she's been to one. Thanks to the good offices of our buddy David in Tennessee several years ago. She's already seen him once.
Uh-huh.
But she's old enough now to know what it is that, you know, to be paying attention. I've given her several of the albums, and she's just completely gone. I mean, they're the theme song of her existence right now as she enters her junior year in high school.
Well, young people have those different types of musicians and musical groups into which they subscribe different parts of their youth, and they'll probably never really forget them. They'll go on to something else. You know how ephemeral sometimes those tastes and things are, but they still, in the back of our mind or their mind or even my mind, I still just go, you know, get on the internet and pull up stuff that I haven't listened to in 30 or 40 years. And, you know, sometimes it brings happiness, and sometimes it brings sadness.
You might find this interesting. You know who one of those artists of yesteryear that Ferg absolutely loves is?
Who's that?
Frankie Lane.
Oh, my Lord.
Because...
Well, he could sing. I mean,
hell yes, he could. When Ferg would go riding around with his grandfather had a tape of Frankie, a CD of Frankie Lane, and my dad couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. But he and little Ferg would go down the highways and byways around here singing Frankie Lane songs to the top of their lungs.
Oh, my Lord. Well, I can remember my dad telling me about some of these bawdy songs that he heard when he was a young man back in the 30s. And, you know, of course, he and some of his friends would go to some of these places and hear some of the stuff, you know, some of the songs. And, you know, there was a great deal of cultural enrichment on his part, you know, as far as his own recollections of those days are concerned. Things that you know, wish you had on tape, for example, of his renderings and actual having been there. It's just like when I mentioned my Aunt Madeline, you know, at the Cotton Club, and this is back during Prohibition. She's a fairly young woman then, and you know, Cab Calloway and God bless her, she lived to the age of 96, and we used to talk frequently, and she was a night owl, and she'd have a couple drinks, and she would, you know, I would sit back and listen to her talk for a long time about New York in the 30s and stuff like that, and some of the stuff they saw there. And I'm so glad to have had the opportunity to have listened to her. And one thing about listening to older people, and a lot of people just don't believe in that anymore, but if you really want to learn something, you listen to somebody who's got some age on them.
Well, absolutely, Jim. You know, I was talking last night about the curse, you know, the human curse that leads us into so many problems is the relative shortness of our lives within the context of the breadth of civilization or culture. And,
well, absolutely, it's so ephemeral.
And you know, there are actually scholastic studies that have taken place, scholarly works, about the different ways that the human brain was wired in non-literate, memory-based societies where all traditions were oral, and the way that the brain changed when we moved over to literacy. And, you know, there's some good and there's some bad, and the purpose, as I recall, was to have some idea of the way that the brain is currently being rewired in the so-called digital age. And
I've often wondered about that, the effects that it's had upon our own psyche and everything.
It's had a profound effect. Moreover, when we consider, and it's part of a larger piece that I've mentioned on a number of occasions, you know, the nursing homeization of America, and something that Joe Bagent wrote so beautifully about in Rainbow Pie, talking about how the consumer culture of the post-World War era drove people off of their subsistence family farms and into factory work or whatever in strange and foreign lands. Consider what was called the Hillbilly Highway that ran from Appalachia up to places like Toledo and Akron and Cleveland, and Bill has mentioned from time to time working with hillbillies, you know, working with Appalachian people who had left the desperation and the poverty These families didn't necessarily know that they were poverty stricken until somebody came along and said, "Did y'all know y'all live in poverty? Did you know that you could get on out of here and go work for 75 cents an hour on an assembly line in Ohio and have a good life?" And virtually everybody I know who had family that did that, wherever the hillbillies went, they pined for home, Jim.
I'm sure they did.
I know we have a little tradition in our family here, especially when, well, it's when Ferg and I are traveling, like when we've gone to D.C. When we cross back into the state of West Virginia, we call home. And we be, and when we cross under the line that says "Welcome to West Virginia," we start singing the state song, the West Virginia Hills.
Well, I feel that way about South Carolina.
And that all comes from the fact that when I was a little boy, and we'd take those several times frequently in any given year, trips back up here, my mother, I was raised by two people who could not carry a tune in a bucket and were not welcome in any church choir. Welcome in the pews, not in the choir. And I hold no brief against the churches for having felt that way. But she couldn't sing either. But we'd cross under that "Welcome to Wild, Wonderful West Virginia" sign, and she'd start belting out that song, and it seemed like she'd never been happier. And that's part and parcel, Jim, of why I wound up back here. I felt like there was something, there was something to be accomplished, some duty owed. And, well, here I sit.
Well, duty owed, duty respected, and I certainly hope that you can accomplish your goals and your aims, that's for sure. They are definitely well-founded and well-grounded, that's for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. excuse me. But, let me see if there's anything else I wanted to say. Oh, you know, back early in the program, this is far, and I don't know if you want to talk about this or not, just say if you don't. You were talking about the burning of witches and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in the town of Würzburg in Germany, during the burning times, I think they immolated 600 women or 600 people. And a lot of that was designed to take their property.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
I mean, I have a copy of this book called The Malleus Maleficarum.
I could not remember for the life of me how to pronounce it, but it's the Malleus Maleficarum.
Yeah, the hammer of witches, written by two monks, and you know, it was designed to give the witch finders some type of guidebook in which they could go into towns and they could measure the types of people that they were looking for and use it as some type of metric.
But you're right, it had a lot to do with property envy.
Exactly, property envy and sometimes neighbors wouldn't get along and stuff like that. And, of course, then they would be denounced.
Right, and of course, that's one of the things that that white Europeans brought with them to the New World.
Oh, yeah.
The world that was new to them, but quite old to the millions of people who had lived here, but never mind.
Well, they certainly carried some very, very bad and evil traditions with them when they came, and that's for damn sure.
Yeah, and not just virulent disease. But isn't it interesting, you know, in light of the observation that the curse of humanity is short life within the broad scope of culture, isn't it interesting that as recently as 2002 in Afghanistan, the United States, your country, my country, was offering a bounty to people in Afghanistan who would drop the dime on their neighbor and tell them that they were Al-Qaeda? And we've got people on hunger strikes in the concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay who are in Guantanamo simply because their neighbor wanted their goat herd and their pasturage. So they dropped the dime on their neighbor. The United States gave them a handful of whatever the currency was. The other guy got picked up, put a bag on his head, stick a diaper on his ass, put him in a shipping container, roast his ass for a little while on the tarmac at Bagram, then stick him in a C-130, fly him to Guantanamo, and there he sits.
Well, not very noble incentives, that's for sure. And, you know, it hadn't done much good because I think the poppy outgrowth of Afghanistan is probably doing very well, if not tripled or quadrupled since we left there.
Oh, I saw a news story just on the local news, and you know what the local news is like around here, Jim. But I saw a news story on the local news last night talking about how there's an outbreak of heroin usage in Appalachian communities. And you know why that is? Because the street price of things like roxycodone, oxycodone, hydrocodone, and all the odones has gone so far through the roof that people are now looking and going, you know what? That heroin looks like a pretty good bargain.
Yes,
so we got a smack problem in the holler. You know, I remember when America used to laugh at us and say and refer to pills as hillbilly heroin. Well, no more laughing, because we got the real deal. We got the H, we got the smack, we got the horse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, when you listen to the news, like you said before, you hear about all these problems with it and police raids and bad things that are happening to people, and the root of a lot of that is definitely just, you know, drug addiction to horrible opiates like that. And you know, it's a strange thing. When that drug was first developed, it was developed by the Bayer Aspirin Company, and it was around the 1900s or whatever, and I'm sure someone out there can correct me, but nonetheless, it was supposed to be the latest cure for alcoholism. And that's how heroin came on the scene. It was developed by
Bayer. It was developed by Bayer, and at the same time, Bayer was also developing something called aspirin.
That's right, absolutely.
And Bayer decided to put its eggs in the aspirin basket instead of the heroin basket, and the black market got the heroin.
Right, and hence, there it is, and a lot of bad things happened because of that. But anyway, I've taken up too much of your time there. If you have time left or whatever, or feel like playing anything, you can either, well, I may suggest either Lil Green and Press My Button if you feel...
No, that was Lil Johnson, wasn't it?
I mean Lil Johnson, excuse me. If you want to play her, or you can, for the early one that I suggest, which is a much calmer thing, you know, in honor to your father and those people who served in the Pacific beneath the Southern Cross.
And, you know, a couple of different people passed that along, and I find it really, really nice that Robert in Australia has found that series and has begun watching it, and he thinks it's brilliant.
Well, yeah, and that particular song is, you know, it's somewhat cacophonous in a way, because it's describing war at sea, which is not exactly very pleasant. But one of the more pleasant parts of that entire series, I think beneath the Southern Cross, and the Southern Cross is a very small constellation, which is highly visible from that part of the world in Australia. It came from, I think, a Broadway thing called Me and Juliet. And it was incorporated into that Victory at Sea series. And I'm going to leave you to your own devices there to do what you do best, and wish you a good evening. And if you, like I say, if you have a mind, just...
Yeah, I got a couple of more licks I got to hit, but I'm sure we'll get to it in due time, Jim. You have yourself a good evening.
You too.
All right, bye now. It's our buddy Jim. I said I got a couple more licks to hit. Yeah. Brooklyn. There's still a certain generation of people who, when they see the words Los Angeles across a Dodgers uniform, feel a sense of betrayal and hurt and grief. But, and I wasn't real, I wasn't aware of it, but I'm tickled to find out that there's actually professional baseball in Brooklyn. It's a minor league team, the Brooklyn Cyclones, up in the Coney Island neighborhood. And outside the ballpark of the Brooklyn Cyclones is a statue of Pee Wee Reese putting his arm around Jackie Robinson. It's a moment described as being one of the best an example of the best spirits. Or the best of what's right about baseball. The Dodgers with Jackie Robinson were playing in Cincinnati, and the racists in Cincinnati were having an absolute hissy that a black man was on the baseball diamond. And they were screaming and carrying on. And you can well imagine what that entailed. When it is said that Pee Wee Reese walked up and put his arm around Jackie Robinson in that first season Jackie Robinson spent in the majors. Well, that moment is commemorated by a sculpture in front of the stadium where the Brooklyn Cyclones play. And recently, someone came along and painted racial slurs, and you know what we mean by that, and swastikas on the statue, on the sculpture, life size, larger than life. Imagine that. Anybody? Anybody? Hands? Show of hands? Anybody want to bet on the voter registration of the person who did the vandalism? The racist, toxic, hateful vandalism? May 1947, Crosley Field. As a child, I watched a baseball game in Crosley Field in the last season of its existence. The base of the statue will be covered until the paint can be cleaned off. The swastikas and the racial epithets were painted over the inscription at the base of the statue that reads, "This monument honors Jackie Robinson and Pee Wee Reese, teammates, friends, and men of courage and conviction. Robinson broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball. Reese supported him, and together they made history. In May 1947, on Cincinnati's Crosley Field, Robinson endured racist taunts, jeers, and death threats that would have broken the spirit of a lesser man. Reese, captain of the Brooklyn Dodgers, walked over to his teammate Robinson and stood by his side, silencing the taunts of the crowd. This simple gesture challenged prejudice and created a powerful and enduring friendship." That's what they painted the N-word and swastikas over. There is a great evil that lurks in the heart of the human. Some humans, damaged humans, broken humans. Down in the southern part of West Virginia, I think it's Monroe County, there's a railroad tunnel. It's called the Big Bend Tunnel. And it really is the Big Bend Tunnel. Anybody who's ever heard of the legend of John Henry knows that that was the tunnel where John Henry worked himself to death to prove that a man was better than a steam shovel or a steam drill. A steam drill. And so at some point in time, maybe the late 60s, early to mid 70s, an idea was developed that maybe it would be a good idea to put a statue of John Henry, the steel-driving man, in front of the Big Bend Tunnel that he gave his life to create. I'll add parenthetically that he gave his life to create for a bunch of Wall Street crooks and railroad bosses and profiteers and shareholders. Because when you hear the legend of John Henry, you never hear about what happened to John Henry's widow after John Henry died trying to show that a man was better than a machine and more than a machine. They had a ceremony and they unveiled the statue all those years ago. And I don't know how long that statue was up before somebody came along and painted the N-word all over the statue of John Henry. Down in Malden, West Virginia, they put up a bust of Booker T. Washington because he was born there. You'd think a little community like Malden would be proud of something like that. But no. No. Some white person came along and painted racial epithets all over it. You know, this is another one of those moments. I mean, I really do think about the information that we discuss on this program. And if these signals are somehow getting out into space, What must the peaceable aliens of Norblap 9 think? I just don't know. And I've given up on trying to understand. A case of beer and a can of Krylon, and by God, you can show them people what you think of that white man putting his arm around that one around his shoulder in Cincinnati, 1947. By God, we'll show them the superiority of the white race. Jesus. So we find ourselves at the end of this Thorn in the Side Thursday. $270 to go to get out of the hole. It'll be $420 for Friday. Fitting somehow, I guess. Thank you, Thomas, for helping out tonight. You're the only one who did. Thank you for all of those of you, however, who have helped out previously. It's the only way this continues. Thanks to all of our volunteers, and thanks to all of you who listen and share your ideas and your thoughts. Thank you all. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to my darling Agnes. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben Birch has been providing progressive radio on the Internet for over 10 years now. He's never sent a bill. And thanks, as noted earlier in the evening, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and acheact.org. You can help Cold River Mountain Watch with a contribution if you wish, and it will be greatly appreciated. You could go there and buy one of the coolest t-shirts in America, Save the Endangered Hillbilly. And you can take action at acheact.org and help us end this ongoing toxic nightmare known as mountaintop removal. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.